Welcome to Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news. Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Daly and Kevin Laramie.
Hey everybody, what is up? Welcome back to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. My name is Mark Daly, I'm your host, and well, it's almost weekend, and unfortunately, like the past couple of weekends, we don't have a Formula One race to look forward to, but we'll be back to it in just a week's time as the F1 circus heads back to the UK for the British Grand Prix, and then after that, it's a doubleheader at Silverstone, and the week after we'll have the 70th anniversary Grand Prix in a back-to-back weekend again, which is great. Looking forward to it, and it sure is weird when you get a weekend off all of a sudden. You sure get used to it quickly, and I'm really missing not having a race this weekend, but I suppose there is too much of a good thing. But still, there is news to talk about, maybe not so much as we've had over the past couple of weeks, where there's been a real flurry of things going on in and around all the teams, most of the teams, as you might expect. But even though that there might not be the same volume of news that we've seen over the past maybe a month or so, there is still plenty of interesting things going on to talk about. So before we get into it, let's just take a quick look at the standings in the World Championship after three rounds of the season thus far. On the driver's side, we have Lewis Hamilton at Mercedes leading his teammate Valtteri Bottas by 5 points. Lewis leading the way with 63. Valtteri Bottas, 58 points. Max Verstappen for Red Bull, 33. Lando Norris still hanging in there in the top five in McLaren with 26 points. And then Alex Albon in the second Red Bull, rounding out the top five. Over on the constructors' side, shouldn't really be a shock. This is pretty much the way that it is each and every year. Mercedes up on top, 121 points. Red Bull, 55 points, long way back in the constructors. McLaren in there really nicely at the moment, 41 points. Racing Points with the pink Mercedes, 40 points. And then Ferrari, shockingly, just in the top five. And they're still about 13 points behind Racing Point, which is absolutely amazing and completely shocking. Anyways, let's get into the news. And like I said, there's quite a few things to talk about. We're going to talk first about Christian Horner talking about what led up to Max Verstappen's a bit bizarre crash on the way to the starting grid at last weekend's Hungarian Grand Prix. And Christian was saying that Max was going flat out on the damp track. Wasn't really out and out raining, but the track was still a bit damp. And he was doing this because he needed to synchronize his eighth gear, and he just misjudged the grip level. Horner did say that he was very impressed with the repair job that they did on the grid to get Verstappen back and up and running. And they only did so and made the 5 minute cutoff by literally seconds. And Max did a very good job to really put his head down and take second place. Christian did go on to say that overall it was a depressing weekend for the team. Anyways, Horner had to say, quote, "I was watching the outlap on the monitor and saw Max ride run wide at turn 6 and 7. He was pushing to find out where the grip was and trying to synchronize eighth gear on the run down to turn 12, which means you have to be flat out to get that synchronization. The circuit was more slippery than he thought, and the tires were pretty cold. Nobody could quite believe their eyes when he went off into the barrier. Luckily, he managed to keep the engine running in reverse out of the barrier. We were unsure how serious the damage was, and he had to decide quickly whether to call him into the pit lane, but we made the call to send him out on the grid and see if we get the job done so he wouldn't lose his grid position," end quote. So yeah, that was a bit of a strange one, but it was I think it was still a very, very interesting situation that we've seen just how dominant over the past couple of races that Mercedes have been. I mean, the double DNF for Red Bull at the Austrian Grand Prix, first race of the season about 3 weeks ago, I think was a really, really kind of a bizarre thing. But still, we see that basically 50% of the field didn't actually finish that race in the end. I mean, it was only 11 out of 20 cars did by the time it was all over. It was quite strange to see that both Red Bull cars didn't finish the race, because Christian Horner was actually saying in the run up to the start of the season that he felt that this was probably one of the, you know, I think he was saying it was the most prepared they'd been for a season ever. And at least it was the most prepared that they've been in the turbo hybrid era. So they really felt confident going into the season, and they struggled a little bit. And then, you know, you get to the second race of the season, you have Max, you know, he obviously didn't take any points home in the first race of the year after retiring. And then he didn't really have much to fend off Valtteri Bottas. I mean, still, he was good to, you know, get a podium after it was all said and done. But still, he really didn't have much in the way to fight off Bottas. He really gave it a really valiant effort to hold him off for about a lap. But it just wasn't there in the long run. But still, it was interesting. I thought this past weekend in Hungary, when you kind of looked, especially in that final phase of the race, that Bottas was put in a couple of really, really quick laps. And you saw some of the calculations and some of the things that, you know, when he might actually close the gap. But by the time it was all said and done, he got just within arm's distance. But he probably would have needed another several laps to get a little bit closer and really get into position to try and pass Max Verstappen. Not easily done. Under normal circumstances, but even so, on a track like the Hungaroring, where there really are only a couple of real good spots to overtake, the first one being at the end of start finish into turn one, and then going around the corner down the hill into that series of corners into turns two and three, where we've seen quite a few overtaking maneuvers over the years, and most famously when Max Verstappen and Danny Ricciardo had a coming together at in the Red Bulls a couple of years ago. But still, you know, good job, great job by Max Verstappen to stick it out. Great job that the team did to keep him in the car, keep him in the race without having to go back to the pits, or even worse, having to retire the car before the lights went green. And hopefully they can build a little bit of momentum out of that race. But they kind of seem to be in a bit of a weird place, don't you think, at the moment? They're clearly faster than some of their other rivals out there. Racing points, they're pretty close. We've seen that they're a lot closer to the Red Bulls, definitely quicker than Ferrari so far in the season. But Red Bull maybe just marginally ahead of those teams, but still, they're quite a ways off the pace of Mercedes and that very, very competitive W11 that they're running this year. So I don't know if we can really expect to see them close that gap in at the front there with the Mercedes. It just seems unrealistic. It just seems that they've come and they've just got a really, really good car. I mean, if they are saying that, you know, last year's car was a good car in the W10, and this is basically an evolution thereof. And Lewis was just saying a couple of weeks ago that he believes that this year's car, the W11, is the best car that they've designed and built at Mercedes. So, I mean, that's really saying something. I mean, how many world championships has he won there? A whole bunch, right? And he's had some very, very good cars to do it. I mean, it's always come down to Lewis Hamilton or his teammates to win the World Championship since 2014. So I think that's quite a bit of praise to say that this year's car is the best of the lot so far. Anyways, this one I think is a bit of an interesting one. We're just going to stick with Red Bull for a moment. And Christian Horner says that he's struggling to understand some of the criticism that that Max's teammate Alex Albon is getting. He feels it's unwarranted that he's being criticized for his early season performances and so far in the championship. He finished fifth in Budapest and didn't make it into Q3 when he was caught out by a lack of running with the setup they introduced on Saturday morning. He got up into the top five after starting 13th on the grid, and this was following up a solid fourth that he had the Styrian Grand Prix, and of course didn't finish the opening race of the season. But anyways, I mean, there's always going to be, I think, a lot of comparisons drawn to between the guy that's driving beside Max Verstappen. I think that's always going to be the case, no matter which team it is, especially when one of the top teams that there's always going to be that comparison. When you have somebody as good as Max Verstappen, who obviously has a potential to be a world champion, given the car. I mean, we've seen him drive cars beyond the limit of what they should be capable of. And you really wonder, it'd be a pretty awesome thing. Let's face it, to take, say, Charles Leclerc, Max Verstappen, Lewis Hamilton, put them all in the same car and let them go head to head. I think that would be a really cool thing to see. I mean, it's also completely impractical. It's never going to happen, but it would be cool to see what these guys could all do. I mean, maybe take all six of the drivers from the top three teams, from Red Bull, Mercedes, and then Ferrari, throw them all into the same car and let them go out there head to head, see who finishes first and who finishes sixth out of that group. It would be quite spectacular. Anyways, just going back to Albon, yeah, of course he's going to be under a lot of scrutiny. Like, a lot of people are going to be looking at him, but I guess also there is that history there that you have at Red Bull. I mean, we saw it with Danny Kvyat being sent back down to Toro Rosso, making the way for Max Verstappen back in 2016. We saw it last year after Pierre Gasly had a tough start to the year and was sent back down to Red Bull down to Toro Rosso in favor of moving Alex Albon. And I think that Albon is, I think that he's really done a decent job so far. I mean, let's face it. I mean, the thing is, when you had previously, you had Danny Ricciardo and Max Verstappen. I mean, these two guys were honestly, they were racing for podiums, and you knew that they were going to win the odd race between them. And what with Ricciardo leaving, that was always going to, I don't want to say it was going to maybe weaken the team, but it was certainly going to change the dynamic there, because you had two very capable drivers. Max always was, I think, you know, the signs were there that he was the rock star. He was going to be the guy that team was going to be built around. And if you go and watch F1 Drive to Survive on Netflix, season one, it's very interesting as that series evolves, just the things, the different clips that they have about Ricciardo and Max and Red Bull and Renault and all those different things going on behind the scenes a couple of years ago. And you could see why Ricciardo would not want to stay there. I mean, you could make the argument that he obviously feels that he deserves to be a top driver in a top team. And even though maybe they never came out and said it explicitly that Max was number one and Daniel Ricciardo was number two, I think it was always a 1A and a 1B that Ricciardo was always maybe just a little bit lower in stature. But, you know, maybe it was more perceived than anything else. But certainly, even though it was shocking at the time when he made the announcement that he was going to go to Renault, you know, considering where Renault were and still are at this point in time, that you could completely understand that. But still, it really changed the dynamic in that team. And there wasn't anybody really immediately to step up and really fill those shoes. I mean, where Ricciardo was fighting for podiums and was always in sort of the best of the rest kind of category. For the most part, you had Gasly, who basically kind of struggled to make the top tens. And, you know, he just really got off on the wrong foot. If you go back to 2019, he crashed in winter testing, which, you know, really messed them up. You know, they had a lack of spare parts, and that also affected Max Verstappen, the amount of time that he could get out on the track to get his laps in and all that sort of stuff. So you can see why after that first half of the season, when they got to the summer break, that it clearly wasn't working with Gasly and the team, sending him back to Toro Rosso. And I guess that is the big question now. Is he, what caliber is he? Is he only that sort of caliber for Toro Rosso? And that's not really a long-term thing. I mean, I know that they may have a bit of a gap at Red Bull in their young drivers program with guys that are able to come into Formula One. I mean, that's why Kvyat got back in last year because they didn't have a lot of guys that had enough points to get their super license and all that. But still, I mean, Kvyat, I think, you know, this is a different story. He's been pretty decent and a lot more reliable and stable than his first go round in Formula One. Sitting out that year certainly made, I think, a difference to him. But Toro Rosso is more of a transition team. That's kind of the landing point for the younger drivers to come into Formula One. These guys are really the cream of the crop of the Red Bull Academy, the drivers program. with the hopes of getting them into the big team, into the main team, and hopefully you're challenging for races. So, I mean, I can't see that being a long-term thing for either Kvyat or Pierre Gasly. I mean, they're either good enough to make it up into the big team, and I suppose their job there is only safe as long as there's nobody more promising coming up or is in the system right now. But I think it's too soon to give up on Alex Albon, and I do agree with what Horner was saying, that that he doesn't understand why the there's this criticism so far. He had to say, quote, "I'm very pleased. I mean, it's been a difficult weekend for Alex. The car spec had been changing a lot from session to session. When you haven't got the experience, and he doesn't, that's harder to deal with. So I think actually in the race where he managed to find his rhythm and pace was very, very good and comparable with Max. He was overtaking was strong, and against Ferraris and whoever else was passing out there, I thought he did a super job today. And if you look at his pace in clean air, it was pretty decent. I think we're very, very satisfied with Alex's performance today." So yeah, definitely give the guy a bit of a chance to really settle in, and let's see what he can do once. I mean, you have to remember he's still a young guy and still hasn't really had the benefit of a full season with Red Bull under his belt. So we'll just take it from there. Anyways, time for a break here on the Overtime Media Network. Don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
All right. Well, welcome back to the show. And we still got a little bit of cleaning up to do, follow up stuff from last weekend's Hungarian Grand Prix. And I think one of the interesting things at the time was the fact that Valtteri Bottas was not penalized for the jump start he had before the start of the race. I mean, it was obvious that that he moved out of his grid box before the lights, the red lights went out, and we went green, went to racing. And he did edge forward and stopped again, and he put it down to a light on his dashboard that he was sort of following rather than the lights above the start finish line. And that really disadvantaged him at the start. He lost a couple of places, and that's really what it came down to. I mean, even though Max Verstappen did, I think, a great job to stay out ahead and really hold on to that that second place and just put in keep Bottas just far enough behind at the end of the race. Bottas just wasn't able to close the gap as much as he wanted to get into an overtaking position. The fact was that he really lost that race at the start. I mean, it was always going to be a little bit tough for him because he was on the inside of the track where it was off of the racing line. So maybe a little bit less grippy than the outside of the track where the pole was, because the track was greasy and wet in every ways. He obviously did jump the start, but the big key to have been officially in breach of the rules is it comes down to the detection system that is built in the track. So this is very similar to a situation we saw at the Japanese Grand Prix with Sebastian Vettel, who had a similar kind of little nudge forward before the lights went out. Anyways, Michael Massey, the race director at Formula One, had to say, quote, "There are two parts to that. The means by which a false start is determined is actually clearly determined in the sporting regulations and has been in the same process for a number of years, which is the transporter that's fitted to each car is the judgment mechanism." Excuse me, there's a sensor in the road, in the track as well. There's a tolerance within that, and we, as we saw in Japan last year, that is the determining factor. So there is nothing further we have to look at. We spoke to the timekeepers immediately, and they reviewed all the data, and that was the end of the matter, end quote. So, yeah, interesting. It was pretty obvious, I think, within the first couple of laps that nothing was going to happen to Valtteri Bottas, that he was probably going to escape some sort of penalty, or the fact that it might have come up under investigation with the stewards. Because I think by the time that we got to lap five, that even by that point, it seemed that it had become a non-issue. I mean, usually when we see something, it's unsafe release in the pits, causing an accident or some sort of dodginess going on the track, the stewards, that they'll decide to review it, and you get that little notification on the TV monitors that they're doing so. But I mean, by the time we got to about lap five, like I say, and they still didn't have anything officially noted that it seemed like it was going to be, he was going to get away with it. But still interesting to hear, just get that clarification from Michael Massey that the transponders in the car are actually the determining factor in what constitutes a jump start or not. Anyways, Toto Wolff said that their decision to pit Valtteri Bottas late in the race was the only way that they thought they could have taken second place away from Max Verstappen. So opening the lap, like I said, he lost several positions, dropped down to sixth because of that near jump start that he had. But I mean, he fought his way all the way back up to third position in the last 20 laps of the race. And he had to figure, even though there was some traffic in front of him, that 20 laps is a decent amount of distance on the track, decent amount of time left in the race to close that close that gap up to Max Verstappen. And well, now that I look at the notes here, that he was only three quarters of a second behind Max by the time they crossed the start finish line. So who knows? If he had another couple of laps, maybe he would have been able to put a move on Max. And like I say, that saying that is one thing, getting around Max is another. It certainly is never an easy thing. But anyways, Toto Wolff explained later on after the race that Bottas was actually struggling with some graining on the tires that he had in the second stint, just because of how hard he was pushing to catch Max Verstappen. And it really came down that their only opportunity, the only way that they were going to catch him was by changing their strategy. Anyways, Wolff had to say, quote, "It would have been wrong to keep him out because Valtteri's tire had started to grain on the left front quite heavily because he was pushing so hard. We think he would have run out of tire anyway, and putting him onto a new hard in similar way like last year with Lewis Hamilton was actually the only chance of trying to snatch P2. In the end, it wasn't sufficient. There was quite a lot of traffic in between that we didn't clear fast enough, and I think it was in a recovery drive," end quote. So, I mean, disappointing, obviously, for Valtteri Bottas. I mean, at the end of the year, if Lewis ends up winning the championship, and like I say, I think each and every week, I mean, are you really going to bet against that guy after what we've seen all these years? I mean, Lewis has clearly got to be the favorite each and every year. I mean, and this year looking to be obviously a lot shorter than a normal year because of all the canceled races and the rescheduling and stuff like that. Going to be more of a sprint rather than a marathon. 22 races we're going to have this year. I mean, dropping those couple of points could make the difference at the end of the year. I mean, it's still we still have to see whether or not he can win some more races this year and beat his teammate. But still, it's never a good thing when you drop points like that. And I'm sure he must be kicking himself after that poor start that he had. Okay, well, One other thing, sticking with the Mercedes. They still are unsure how good the W11 is going to be in some of the hotter conditions. Technical director James Allison said that there's still a lot of concerns in the team about racing in hotter temperatures this summer. Who knows what it'll be like once we get to some of the other venues, some of the other tracks into the fall. But, hot weather wasn't necessarily an issue last weekend in Hungary. I mean, how many times have we seen wet weather in Hungary since the 1980s? I mean, you can probably count all the wet sessions either in practice and qualifying and race conditions we've seen at the Hungaroring. You can probably count them on one hand. I mean, it's the weather has always been very, very good there. So it was, it wasn't an issue there. Last year, obviously, the cooling was a big issue at the Red Bull Ring for the Austrian Grand Prix. This year, not so much maybe as last year. And then at the Styrian Grand Prix, the second of the doubleheader at the Red Bull Ring was a cooler, wetter conditions. So it wasn't a big issue that time. Anyways, Allison had to say, quote, "I'd note that we've had two quite cool tracks. So far, it was warmish in the first race of the year, but that was also the race where we were least convincing. So we would like to find out how swift we can be when the track is roasting hot and whether or not we can still show the sort of tire management and pace under those conditions that we've been lucky enough to show in the opening races of the years. I think anyone who sat with us through the first weekend of the year wouldn't have had entertained the idea of a Mercedes procession at that stage. That would have seen us all desperately worried about the car and its ability to finish a single race. Every car on the grid has a sort of Damocles hanging over pretty much every lap because they're all experimental vehicles and with any number of ways that they can catch you out, or actually you disappoint yourself for not having seen it coming. We are only too well aware of the billion frailties that are there, even in a product that is pretty strong like our car and the driver combo that we've got this year," end quote. So interesting. We will see. I don't think that, let's be fair here. Let's be honest. I don't think that we're going to see super hot roasting weather at the British Grand Prix at Silverstone. Could happen. I know that they had quite the heat wave recently, so it'll be interesting to see what the weather is like. I mean, if we can hit the high 20s or even into the 30s centigrade next week. You don't typically associate that sort of very warm summer weather in a country like England, but we have seen obviously that it does occur, and if it does occur there or somewhere else over the next say 6 weeks or so, then whether or not this is going to be a weak point for them. But still interesting that that is out there, that still seems to be an issue. And I do find it interesting that that Allison is being quite forthcoming and actually admitting publicly that they do have these concerns and these issues with their car. Anyway, so we're going to get away now from that sort of stuff. There's a lot of stuff coming up about Ferrari I want to get to, but before we do that, I just want to touch base now very briefly about the F1 calendar moving forward. So Hockenheim, where we've seen the German Grand Prix on an off and on basis over the past several years, they've now admitted that they are out of the running to hold a Grand Prix this year because of the strict limits of the number of people that would actually be able to attend the race. And it looked like they might be one of the contenders to grab one of the European race slots for this year in the very strange year that we've had, what with all the cancellations and rescheduling due to COVID, and then this this redesigned 15 to 18 race season that, who knows if it's going to happen yet. We don't know exactly when it's what's going to happen. I mean, we're basically all confirmed up until the end of September. Last week we found out the Tuscan Grand Prix and the Russian Grand Prix are a go. So Tuscany is going to be at Mugello, Russian Grand Prix at the Sochi Autodrome, where it's been for the past couple of years. We still have the USA, Mexico, and Brazil on the schedule. Still maybe subject to confirmation, but there are still some other names floating out there, like Imola still being thrown out there. And there are a couple others that may come on to the onto the schedule as well. They were hoping to get some fans back to the races by September, and Formula One is hoping to get people back into the stands for the Russian Grand Prix at the end of September. But there are tighter local restrictions in the Hockenheim region, than that limits the amount of people that that can gather at events, even outside, and those don't look like they're going to be lifted anytime soon. So that means that this basically eliminates any chance that that they're going to get a race there, even on this schedule this year. Anyways, Joran Teske, the managing director of Hockenheim, said, quote, "From today's point of view, for a potential race in October, we cannot assume that an event with more than 500 spectators would be possible. So from an economic point of view, this makes us less attractive for Formula One than any other race, racetracks where they are allowed fans even under certain conditions. Therefore, it will not be possible to live up to our offer, which was to hold a Grand Prix under the special circumstances of the coronavirus crisis. We can confirm, therefore, that there will be no Grand Prix at Hockenheim in 2020. A bit of a shame. Hockenheim is one of the tracks that I've been to. It's a great venue. It's just got a real feeling of history there. And, sadly, I guess I'm old enough now to say that that I attended there. And I actually didn't go for Formula One. I was there for a DTM race, longer ago than I care to admit. But still, the old, that sort of kidney shape layout that they have, which has obviously been drastically altered in the interim since I've been there, it's more technical. Because, I mean, they would come into through that sort of little twisty bit in the stadium section, pass, start, finish, go into that fast right-hander, and then they'd disappear into the forest, and you wouldn't see them for a minute or two until they came back around the other side. So, I mean, not really great for spectators. You know, the way that it's is now, it's much better for TV, it's much better for fans, and it's much more compact. I'm not a big fan of the changes, but maybe I'm just a little bit too nostalgic for that sort of thing. So Hockenheim officially off of the schedule. So some of the other races that are being thrown out there is Imola, which has been talked about for the past couple of weeks. You have the Nürburgring in Germany, which has been thrown out there as well the past couple of days, and who knows? There's the possibility of maybe having a race in Portugal this year at Portimão, and they haven't had a Portuguese Grand Prix since 1996, and that is a long, long time ago. So that would be kind of cool to see whether or not they could pull that off. And I got a couple more things to do, but I'm getting late for a break here, and a couple more thoughts on this, I should say. So we'll do that just on the other side of the break. So don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510, is he declaring an emergency? There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, well, welcome back to the show. And just for following up, just to finish the thought that I wanted to make, just with the possibility of maybe getting the Nürburgring on the calendar for Formula One. So the three races or venues that are being brought up now are Portimão in Portugal, Imola in Italy. That one's been out there for several weeks now. We know that we're having the Tuscany Grand Prix at Mugello after Imola, and the possibility of having an Italian triple header of races services has really been, I think, tantalizing and appealing to a good many people. And that certainly has been out there for a couple of weeks. But it would be cool from a personal point of view to see the race at the Nürburgring. That is the very first track that I went to see my very first Grand Prix way back in 2001. So obviously I'm older than I care to admit, but it was a great, great experience because that was really sort of the start of peak Schumacher mania. And it was really cool to see. We were sitting down at the bottom of the track and I think they believe they call it the Dunlop corner, that hairpin when they come down the hill into that hairpin. It's not a really, really slow corner, say like some of the slowest corners we see in Formula One, but it slows the cars down enough. And it was really cool because you'd see them, they come around through a start finish, go through a series of corners, and then they kind of wind their way down the hill. So it was cool because you would see the acceleration and the way the cars would come down through those series of corners down the hill into the hairpin. So you'd see them coming down with the speed, put the brakes on, go through that slower hairpin corner, and then they would accelerate, go up the hill, and then go off into a left hand around the corner. So it's pretty cool. So you get to see, you know, if you ever go to a race at the Nürburgring, especially if Formula One goes back there in the future at some point, it is a good point or a good place to sit at that part of the track because you really get to experience the different the different aspects of the performance of a Formula One car. And of course, being back long ago in the olden days when the cars were normally aspirated, I still remember sitting there, and the stands were absolutely packed with people wearing Ferrari shirts and hats and Ferrari flags and German flags and Schumacher mania. I mean, it was really, really cool, and all the red flares and everything like that. But it really was quite the experience from that point alone, but also just the noise of the cars. And I remember, I had my a little container with my earplugs around my neck, and you're sitting there. I went. I think there was about six or eight of us. We went with a group of friends to watch that race, and we went there for the entire weekend. And you're sitting there with your buddies, and there's a lot of people there, and there's a lot of noise, and you're all talking and laughing, having a good time and getting excited for the start of the race. And we all kind of forgot to put our earplugs in. Most of us did anyways in our group. And, the noise, the absolute cascade of noise of the entire field of, I don't remember off the top of my head how many cars were in Formula One at the time, if it was 20, if it was 18 or 22, but I mean, it was a lot. And those normally aspirated cars, they just made a noise that you would not believe. I mean, one car on its own, say during qualifying, it was loud enough, but when the entire field went by, especially at the start of the race, and it was, I mean, the without having your earplugs in, it was excruciatingly loud. It really, really was very painful. And then you fast forward a number of years. I also went to the Spanish Grand Prix in 2014. That's sadly the last time I was able to attend a Grand Prix in person. That was the first year of the V6 turbo hybrid cars. And, I went with my wife and we had our earplugs, we're all ready and everything. And then, of course, at the opening lap, I mean, it was obvious during practice and qualifying that the cars, being the V6 turbo hybrids were much, much quieter than they were in the past. And I mean, they'd only had a couple of races under their belt. And there was a big controversy for those of you that remember back in 2014 when they first came out, just how quiet they were and things like that. But it was noticeable, and just the one big comparison that I made, or noted myself, was just in the span of time of about 10 or 12 years or whatever it was between the two races that I went to, was just the fact that in 2002 when I went to the European Grand Prix compared to the Spanish Grand Prix in 2014, I mean, the cars were so quiet I didn't put my earplugs in the entire time. But anyways, that is a bit of a tangent, but still. From a personal point of view, I would very much like to see the Formula One go back to the Spanish, or sorry, to the Nürburgring, And it would be kind of cool. I mean, the way that things have been going this year, obviously it's fluid at the best of times. I mean, we have a confirmed calendar at the moment. And obviously it looks like we're going to get a couple of races still added on at some point in the coming weeks. And we'll wait and see whether or not one of those, those venues, I think it'd be pretty cool to have one or all three of them or a combination thereof, which would be two, obviously, would be a cool thing to see. So we're going to just have to sit tight and see what Chase Carey and the people of Formula One can sort it out over the next couple of weeks or months. Anyways, talking about the Spanish Grand Prix, so even though there's been a bit of a rise of coronavirus in Catalonia, in the Barcelona area in recent weeks, they're still set to have the Grand Prix go ahead on August 16th because despite the rise in COVID cases and reintroduction of more restrictions in the area. There have been some concerns going around because this is the rising cases there has been going on for about two and a half weeks now. So there have been some concerns during that time about holding the race, even though the track is a good 45 minutes out of the city. If I remember, when we went, we didn't drive. We were staying in a hotel downtown. We took a shuttle bus from downtown from the city to the track, and I seem to remember it was about 45 minutes, definitely less than an hour to get there. So it makes you wonder whether or not that is isolated enough. The Hungaroring being outside of Budapest, Spielberg, where the Red Bull Ring is fairly far removed. Although makes you wonder how they can contain themselves at the track. So people in Barcelona last week were asked to stay at home for 15 days, and there's a ban being placed on gatherings of more than 10 people. And then cultural activities and recreational sport have been suspended for the time being. So there was some talk that maybe Formula One could stage another Grand Prix at Silverstone in case the lockdown situation in Catalonia became more severe. So you'd have three races there, because the way it's set up right now, we've got the British Grand Prix next weekend. Then the weekend thereafter, you have the 70th Grand Prix that is on the 9th of August and the 16th of August, the week after that. So we go from one triple header into another triple header, that could have been a possibility. But anyways, looks like it's going to be going ahead. Some spokesman for the circuit at Barcelona said that that they're outside of the lockdown area in the city. So the people attending the race at the circuit are actually unaffected by the restrictions that are currently in place. So a spokesperson, told motorsport.com, quote, "Everything is going ahead as planned. We are not affected by the restrictions. Everything is controlled and reinforced with Formula One, the FIA and circuit protocols, which are very strict," end quote. So that's good. It was reassuring to hear that that's probably going to go ahead as planned, and certainly hope that the situation in Barcelona with the lockdown situations and reintroduction of anti-COVID measures really pays off, and they can get that under control very, very quickly. Got some Ferrari stuff to talk about. We're starting to run out of time here, so I better pick it up a notch. Sebastian Vettel is quite open now, saying that he's failed in what he called his Schumacher-inspired mission, but he still has no regrets about moving to Ferrari several years ago now. And he was talking with Sky Sports' Martin Brundle before the Hungarian Grand Prix, and he was asked whether he was hurt by Ferrari's decision to let him go at the end of this year, and he was quite frank and open about it. He just basically took it as it was, but I think it was interesting. He did go on, to really explain the reason why he wanted to go to Ferrari. And I mean, who wouldn't want to go to Ferrari? I think everybody, if they had that opportunity, would jump at it. Anyways, Sebastian had to say, quote, "Ferrari has always been a dream of mine, massively inspired by my childhood, by the Michael in red car. I was inspired by him and still inspired by him because I think he was the best that there ever was. I was hoping to take some championships away from Lewis Hamilton so that Michael's record stands a bit longer. Now we are a bit out of striking distance to try and block him. But I think that I wanted this to work myself more than for Michael. I think looking back, my mission, my target was to win a championship, and we didn't do that. So in that regard, we failed, but still we had some really good years and some highlights and some good races, so I don't regret it. End quote. So yeah, I think so. I think that that they have had some you know, some good races, some good years there. I mean, 2018 I think was the closest then that he ever got to getting in there and taking a championship away from Lewis Hamilton, if that's the way that he wants to frame it. Last year, very, very difficult. But Ross Smedley, who is the director of data systems for Formula One and an ex-Ferrari guy, had something a little bit surprising or controversial to say, and he believes that last year, 2019, was Sebastian's best season in Formula One. Anyways, he said this in the F1 Nation podcast earlier this week. He said, quote, "I think we saw the real Sebastian Vettel towards the end of the year, which Sebastian had a little bit lost, and I'm sure he'd freely admit that he wasn't where he wanted to be, both within the team and with his teammate at the start of the year. But then he actually got his head down, and that's a sign of a true champion. He came back," end quote. Yeah, obviously there were a lot of bad moments for Sebastian last year, but I mean, he did have some positive moments towards the end of the year. But I mean, certainly for those of us on the outside, it seems a very difficult kind of thing to really make the case that that was his best year in Formula One. But still, I agree with what Ross Smedley says, that he put his head down, had some good races, and he did make the best out of what was being a tough and difficult situation, and that like Ross says, that is the sign of a true champion. And I would agree to a certain extent. Anyways, Sergio Perez, the Racing Point driver, says it is obvious who would Vettel would replace if he makes a move to the team, which is going to be Aston Martin in 2021. And I think, I think that's obvious for all of us because there are two drivers at Racing Point right now, Sergio Perez and his teammate Lance Stroll, and the team is owned by a guy of the name of Lawrence Stroll, who also has invested a lot of money along with his consortium, not only in the Formula One team, which he rescued a couple of years ago, but he's also put up, what was it, about £500 million into the Aston Martin parent company. So I think it would be doubtful that Lance Stroll would leave Racing Point or Aston Martin. So I think that I think it's fairly obvious that Sergio Perez says it's obvious who would be who would be replaced at Racing Point for next year. And I think that it just makes a lot of sense. Anyways, Perez says, quote, "I think the choice is obvious if someone has to go. I'm a dad. I wouldn't kick my son out, but there's not much I can say. There are many rumors around. For me, nothing. Everything remains the same. I have a contract with the team," end quote. So, yeah, I mean, he's kind of stating the obvious, to overuse a word that's been overused a little bit already. Sebastian, you could see that might make more sense. I mean, at one point, it seemed like the only maybe logical or one avenue that might be open to him might be Renault, whether or not he wanted to go in that direction. But the Racing Point, you can certainly see that. I mean, you see Aston Martin coming into Formula One. They're going to be putting a lot of money into that team, and they're not just showing up to go through the motions. I mean, hopefully not. I mean, I think that the team, that the way that they've been run and the way that they've gone about business the past, say, 2 years or so since Stroll's group came in and rescued the team and put some money into that, I think that they've been going in the right direction. The team obviously hasn't been competing for podiums or anything like that, but certainly this year they've been much further ahead than they have in many, many years. And I do want to finish that thought up, but I'm going to just take another quick break here because I got to go on for a little bit. So anyways, let's take one final break here this evening, and we'll be back in just a moment. All right. Well, welcome back to the show. And yes, just to finish up with the thoughts on Racing Point that I was getting to before the break, is that that even though this is a team that was slowly, I think, dying under Vijay Mallya, just as the money that he was able to put in the team with all the problems he was facing with the his legal problems and being extradited back to India and all that. I mean, it looked like the writing was on the wall that this team wasn't going to be around for much longer, and they'd always was done, I think, a pretty good job of not being one of the bigger, flashier outfits in Formula One. But, you know, you have to give Stroll credit for coming in, putting his money where his mouth is, and getting that team back. I mean, they've slowly been building up. And this year, I mean, they certainly took a lot of people by surprise with the whole pink Mercedes thing. And I just want to get that to in a moment. I just want to stick with, this whole Vettel and Perez thing. They said, and this is a Racing Point, that they're not going to ignore Sergio Perez's loyalty to the team, whatever happens in the decision with Sebastian Vettel. I mean, this, who knows how far along the talks are. I mean, Vettel's pretty nonchalant and kind of casual about it, saying that they just been talks and talks more about, it's interesting, let's see if there's something kind of there or maybe not. Anyways, they said that, they know that he helped them survive in Formula One, and, his loyalty for committing his, his future in to the team, and that will help play a part in their decision to whether or not he's going to be retained for next year. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about the loyalty that that he's had to the team. I mean, he's really been in there. I mean, when I think about guys that should be at a certain team, you associate with a certain team, Lewis Hamilton, obviously you think Mercedes. Sebastian Vettel, well, I mean, obviously in this era, you think of, Ferrari. Take any driver that you can think of that's really made an impression. Mika Hakkinen, if you want to go back a generation, obviously McLaren. But I mean, on a smaller note, maybe a more modest note, you think about Sergio Perez, you're going to associate him with Racing Point or Force India. And he certainly has been, that guy that is really stuck by the team. You got to admire a guy for his loyalty. Anyways, Otmar Szafnauer, the Racing Point team principal, said that no decision has actually been made, even though that they have had some, what he's been saying, loose talks with Sebastian Vettel, which is exactly the same phrase that Vettel used. Anyways, Szafnauer said, quote, "I think the fact that he, Perez, has got a signed contract will be a key factor that means we keep him. But I know what you're asking, and Sergio has been loyal to us. He's been here for a long time. He's a great racer, works well with the team, and he works well with Lance Stroll. He helps Lance, so I'm sure all those factors do matter." End quote. So, yeah, I think that at the end of the day, if you have the possibility to sign a driver like, Sebastian Vettel, four-time world champion, obviously he's had some difficult times in the past couple of years. Is he still a good driver? I think so. Obviously, I think that the things haven't worked out at Ferrari the way that that he wanted. But certainly, I don't think that you become a bad driver overnight. And quite possibly, he might do quite well in the change of scenery. Anyways, Toto Wolff said he will not be playing in a role in influencing the Aston Martin Vettel discussions. He is a shareholder in the in this sports car manufacturer, and he said he's not going to get involved in that in any way or form. He bought a 5% interest in Aston Martin in April of this year, and said that this was just a personal investment. It doesn't have anything to do with his day job at Mercedes, and I'm using the air quotes because I know it's not an easy thing, but I'm sure a lot of us wouldn't call that a job if we had it. It'd be pretty cool. Anyways, Wolf had to say, quote, "My shareholding in the car company is not related to the F1 racing team. I'm not involved in any discussions between Lawrence Stroll, Otmar Szafnauer, and Sebastian. Obviously, I know Sebastian very well, and I've been part of some, let's say, social gatherings, but no more than that." End quote. So, yeah, I mean, that is interesting. And I think that any time that there are any questions that that come up about Total Wolf and Mercedes and Racing Point and Aston Martin, that's always going to come up, even though it has nothing to do with the with the Formula One team itself. Anyways, Safnauer, going back to him, says that that he thinks that the other teams on the grid made a mistake not adopting the philosophy of copying last year's Mercedes W10, and this is obviously a thing that's been a big issue. I mean, with all the all the protests lodged by Renault in recent weeks and races because of the brake ducts. Anyways, Safnauer has to say, when he was asked about if other teams had got their design philosophy wrong, Safnauer had to say, quote, "The answer is yes. However, it doesn't come without risk. We didn't know that we were what we were doing was going to work to the level that it has. There was a big risk that we were going to take a step backwards. As a matter of fact, when we started developing this in the tunnel, that with the ideas that we saw through pictures, we took a huge step backwards. I mean, huge. It was seconds per lap slower in the beginning. And it was our own learning that we did for the development process of CFD and tunnel work and more and designs and redesigns that got us to the place that we did." End quote. So yeah, I mean, the thing is, it is interesting. I mean, it's one thing to take inspiration from something that's obviously done very well. And I think it illustrates a good point in Formula One that whenever somebody comes up with a concept that works, that everybody else seems to copy it, except in this case, and they've taken a lot of heat for that. I mean, even if you see some of the comparison pictures between them, even though there are a lot of similarities, but when you see them side by side, scaled up. I mean, they're clearly two different things. And even Ross Brawn, the managing director of motorsport at Formula One, says that the current protest that's been lodged by Renault against Racing Point is what he calls a tricky problem for the FIA to resolve. Brawn has to say, quote, "My view is copying in Formula One is standard. Every team has, in normal times, digital photographers in the pit lane out there taking thousands of photos of every car for analysis with a view of copying the best ideas. You used to give our photographers a shopping list. Racing Point have just taken it to the next stage and done a more thorough job. There is not a single team in this paddock which is not copied something from another. I'd ask every technical director in the paddock to raise their hand if they haven't copied someone else. If you won't see any hands, I certainly have copied others." End quote. So it is going to be interesting to see how this goes. I mean, the stewards did say after the Styrian Grand Prix that there was merit to the Renault protest, and it would take some time before they actually, for them to do their investigation, and they would only make an announcement once that had all been completed. Anyways, Racing Point, just to stick with them, they say they have specifically 886 drawings which prove the legality of their brake ducts, which fall under this listed and non-listed parts. The Renault is saying that they're identical to the Mercedes and stuff like, and it's basically the whole basis of their protest over the past couple of weeks. Otmar Safnauer, team principal at Racing Point, had to say, quote, "It is impossible for them to be illegal. Brake ducts, just so you know, take a long time to design and make. They are very, very complicated, and we have 886 individual drawings for our brake ducts. Just so you know, they protested the brake ducts, and we don't have any other brake ducts, mainly because they are illegal. We have no concerns whatsoever. Our brake ducts are legal. We ran them last weekend. We ran them again this weekend, and we'll be running them again at Silverstone." End quote. He did go on, I'll just sort of shorten this up here. He did go on to say that that the whole the process is getting frustrating, and having to wait to prove their point, their case. And they were given 3 weeks initially to gather evidence after the Styrian Grand Prix, and the hearing is set to take place sometime between now and the end of next week before the British Grand Prix gets underway. Anyways, getting away from Racing Point, just a couple of minutes left in the show. Ferrari has restructured their F1 technical department after their disastrous start to the 2020 season. Some people calling it disappointing. I think that's kind of mild. I mean, they're only fifth in the constructors' championships. Vettel and Charles Leclerc were 6th and 11th at the Hungarian Grand Prix. And it just hasn't been very good at all. And recently, Matteo Bonato said there would not be any, snap decisions or knee-jerk reactions or mass firings, at Maranello in reaction to the bad start that they've had to the season. Anyway, so they've announced a restructuring of their technical team, and they've created a new performance development department, that's going to be overseen by Enrico Cardile, and he's served as the head of aerodynamics and vehicle project management. And they have Enrico Gugliateri, who's in charge of the power unit. Laurent Miquet is a sporting director and is in charge of the trackside activities. And Simone Resta will continue to lead the chassis engineering department. And I believe that Rory Byrne will be able to count on, Enrico Cardile will be able to draw on the experience of Rory Byrne, who's going to be involved. I believe he's there several months out of the year, even though I think he was retired about 15 years ago, or at least tried to, but is apparently not around. I mean, he designed all of the 7 cars that for Benetton and Ferrari that Michael Schumacher won a world championship in. So definitely, he's a good guy, very smart person to have around. Bonato, like I was saying, he said that sacking people, firing them is not going to make the team any better. It's not going to make them any faster. And he was saying that he had, and quote, "I have confidence for the people who work in the Gestione Sportiva. We've started out on a long process that should lead to another winning cycle." And this is what Bonato told the official Ferrari website. Anyways, he goes on to say, quote, "It will take a while, but the whole company understands and supports this vision. That's why I find it amusing to read some stories that are doing the rounds. It's not by sacking people that you make a car go faster," end quote. So, yeah, I mean, that is one thing. But, he's saying it's a long-term project. But how long is long-term before they get, the ship turned around? How long is it going to be before they get back to being competitive again? And that's one thing that obviously everybody's going to be focusing on, because it is not a good look for them. It certainly does, been a very, very tough and difficult start to this year. And this is a follow-up, this kind of open scandal that, do you really even want to call it a scandal? It's because, the true findings of what was going on with their power unit last year has not been made public. It's been sealed. They have an agreement with the FIA that it would not be made public, even within, within Formula One. And so, I mean, there's a lot of, there's a lot of suspicion there as well, you might understand. And it really is, really makes you wonder what they found was wrong with that. I mean, Ferrari insisted all the way through last year, and especially as the heat picked up in the latter stages of the year, that the engine had been was legal, and that even under scrutiny that it was still found to be a legal power unit. They didn't have any issues with it. And, apparently not. And, certainly they have a lot of work to get them, turned around, to get themselves back in the right direction and doing what they need to do to be winning races, because they've slowly been petering off. 2018, it was a good year. They should have won a championship either in the Constructors or Drivers World Championship, and it slipped away from them. Anyways, like I said, there wasn't maybe as much news as a regular week, but there were some very important things to talk about and discuss. And that's pretty much it that I have for tonight. Coming up to the end of the time here, it is almost midnight on the west coast of Canada on Thursday, July 23rd, 2020. I've got a couple of hours to cut this and finish it and get it all ready for release. So I'm going to leave it right there. So thank you guys for downloading and listening to the show. I really do appreciate the support, and it's good to see that the show is doing very well, and you guys seem to be enjoying it as we get back to racing over the past couple of weeks. And we have more races to look forward to coming up. Again, if you want to get in touch, as always, easiest way is on Twitter at ScuderiaF1. And email scuderiaf1pod@gmail.com. And that's it. That's a wrap. Thank you very much for listening, and talk to you guys again soon. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Scuderia F1 podcast.
If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to ScuderiaF1Pod.com.
Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com.